We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Wojcik. Joining me today is Peter Grandich from Peter Grandich & Company. He's a longtime precious metals investor. How are you today, Peter?
Very well, thank you. Good to be with you.
Excellent to have you. So you were able to call the bottom in gold in summer 2018, and you really rotated out of your general equity positions and into gold, bullion, and miners. So tell us a bit more about how you made that call and what kind of indicators you were really looking at to be able to inform that decision, please.
Sure, Tom. Up until the end of 2013, I had spent 25 years in the metals and market industry, first as a money manager and then as a corporate consultant. But I exited, and for quite a while, I didn't even know what the daily price of gold was. However, in the summer of 2018, I took a hard look at it again, and it seemed to me that there was a near-perfect storm coming together to advocate potential, significant bull run. So I made a tough decision, and I can tell you the first person that was against it was my wife. I decided to sell all my general equities but one, and really put all of that in physical bullion and mostly major mining shares, very few speculative or junior stocks. I did take an extremely large position in an emerging producer, but it was purely and almost all gold, not really any, silver plays of that nature, on the belief that within a few years, we could make a new high. Now, of course, it came a lot faster. And because of it, I took profits along the way, especially as we approached 2000. But overall, I remain a staunch believer that that bull market still has a way to go.
Absolutely. And why don't you tell us a bit more, Peter, about some of the indicators that you were looking at to really inform that decision, as I was saying, of how to really identify that new bull market that was percolating there?
Well, I think the biggest single one, Tom, was the fact that from what I remembered and the people that had been in what was what we used to call the hard asset crew had basically been decimated. They moved on to, cryptocurrencies and marijuana stocks and things of that nature. And the fact that they're really even the most ardent bulls that would, always be bullish on the metals, even they had either tempered their opinion or also joined that crowd and went elsewhere. So I think the first and main thing that attracted me was the contrarianness at that point in time. The other thing that began, was that, this unbelievable amount of money creation as if there's no price to pay for it. I mean, that seems to be the attitude of the younger folks. And, I'm basically a senior citizen now, going to be 65, but there seems to be a very lax attitude that somehow you can create trillions of dollars of new debt and somehow not have to pay for it the same way, I guess, you can put on 100 pounds and not get ill from your health. But we all know that's not true. So I think it was first the fact of real lack of interest. The second, the money creation that was being made. And then when I really started to look at it from the mining side of it, it was clear and evident that there was a great washout underway. There was a cleaning up of balance sheets. There was almost an ending of expiration by major companies. And this just seemed to be that any type of money flow back into gold could really push it higher. And then that's, of course, when you hear higher gold prices, that's where the leverage of mining shares normally come into play. So I think that was the setting for me to get involved. And then the very fact that when I shared it, even with my most ardent followers at the time, because I was still writing the newsletter at the time, even the most ardent bulls were questioning that you would do such a thing. So I think the contrarian me really was the thing that drove me most to get into that type of position.
Very interesting, Peter. So can you tell us a bit more about your thinking around really buying into gold equities versus more of the physical side, like the more bullion, and why that is, please?
Sure. So when I made the original move, I was more weighted to physical bullion than I was mining shares. However, once we got to, I forget exactly around, but it was under 2000, I decided to take some serious profits. And then when gold first came back to 1850 in that area, it seemed to me that the next leg up the leverage of mining shares would come into play. And while I know there's people that predict all sorts of very high numbers for gold, my targets, I'd be glad to live with a $2,200 or $2,300 gold price for the rest of my natural life because the opportunities for significant producers to make an ample amount of money and also to develop projects that may not be as attractive at $1,300 or $1,400 gold would be enormous. So this time around, while bullion may have a 20 or 30% further run, in my eyes, at least for the foreseeable future, the leverage now, because mining companies, if you look at what's transpired there, they dramatically cleaned up their balance sheets. They haven't gone on a buy-in spree like they did last time. In fact, most of the majors, the big ones that could merge with each other, have. And I think you're going to see a lot of M&A because where there's still a lot of too many mining stocks, if you want to call it that, is in the emerging producer end where they're having trouble growing from a 100, 50, 100, 200,000 ounces a year producer to become a multi-million ounce producer. And we're already seeing that consolidation. And I think the other thing that just makes it of interest is that when you start to look at general equities and the overvaluations, or at least not undervalued, I think there's just will be a seeping of capital out of general equities in 2021 looking for homes. It's one of the reasons, and I'm not here to talk about it because I don't have any expertise in it, but it's one of the reasons that they've been able to drive Bitcoin up in the way that they have is because money managers are finding it harder and harder to find something they think that can still go up a lot. And one of the things I think that will come back home to them and see it, and that is that gold stocks are not overpriced. In fact, there are some indicators that suggest relative to not only gold, but relative to the S&P and what have you, they may be at some of the cheapest levels they ever been. And I think it's going to be hard pressed for money managers once they get into 2021 to find areas like that. It's one of the reasons you may or may not want to talk about, but it's one of the reasons for the first time ever I entered the uranium market because they were so beaten down and so undervalued relative to everything else. So I think that's what's going to help drive the mining shares, if not anything else, is just that people are going to seek the remaining areas that aren't way overpriced. And I think we'll see that in 2021.
Absolutely. We'll get to the uranium sector, as you were saying there. But I wanted to ask your opinion on where we are, you think, in this cycle. I know you said you were buying back into miners and producers at the 1850 level. So do you think we're headed for the next leg up here and this is a bottom for this time being?
Well, Tom, after 36 years, 37 years now in this business, and having once think I knew where the markets were going only to lose a lot of money, not once, but twice, I don't know for certain or near certain where the market's going, but I can take, educated guess. And an educated guess here right now on the gold market is, like I said, it's still relatively attractive compared to many other choices. But I think the thing that gets me excited, even though it's tough for retail investors to see it, and that is that in the most recent profit taking, and that's really what it was, we ran up so much earlier this year that it was, almost semi-parabolic, that when we declined, how many people became weak-kneed bulls or actually became bearish? Something I've never seen to such a level when we were in the middle of a bull market. Normally, when markets corrected, people pounded the table even harder. But so many people either started hedging their views or actually saying, we're going to 1600. I think we can go as low as 1200. In some of the dominating areas where gold bulls normally hang out, I don't need to name those websites, what have you, but it was almost in a sense semi-shocking to see bearish forecasters, in that arena. So I think there was a lot of skepticism in recent weeks about gold, and that was necessary in order to put in a good intermediate to long-term bottom. Most recently, there was concerns that, if certain levels were taken out, it was going to decline. Instead, we're bucking up against 1900 as you and I speak. And even though we finished this week here in usually a thinning trading, and probably some people will wait a few days before they really get back to hard investing in the new year, the very fact that we didn't break down and we seem to put in a good bottom, I think will bode well for you know, a 2000 and something as early as the first quarter of 2021 for gold.
Excellent. Peter, tell us a bit more about why you don't want to see, let's say, a $5,000 or a $10,000 an ounce gold price.
Well, I wouldn't mind seeing it 5 or 10 years from now, but in 5 months from now, you know, or even a year from now, the things that would be happening in life itself, I just don't think would be worth that price of gold unless you had some island you can go to and be on yourself. Now, I take in and, you know, I weigh very heavily my faith in my work. And I would say that life as we knew it, which already has been dramatically upheavaled, at least in 2020, I believe in some instances changed forever. And we're not going to see certain things that we got used to. But if you told me somehow, Tom, you saw the future and in November 2021 or even November 2022, gold is 5,000 and something. Well, I can just tell you the financial world was rocketed hard in some bad way. And as bad as things have already been politically and socially, they probably got a lot worse. And I don't know if I need to have gold. Like I said to you earlier, I don't think people realize how profitable gold will be to gold miners. Most miners will tell you if they can get $2,200 gold for the next 3 to 5 years, they can make a lot of money. So in some sense, I don't want to see it because it would almost certainly mean life in itself has grown worse, a lot worse than even this past year was. And then also the fact that if we got up to that at that point in time, you know, it would have been hard pressed not to have taken profits probably long before that. You know, the key to success, or at least for me, it's been, and I didn't follow this at times, is it's not how much you make, it's how much you don't lose that'll end up separating the winners from the losers. And if we would rise to such a level in that speed, I would just forcefully take profits simply because it's a level that I would have been happy 5 years from now, and here it is 5 months from now. That would be my comment to Bitcoin holders now. It's great if you've been in it. I'm like Switzerland. I didn't get involved in it simply because I felt you had to have a real understanding of it. And I was just at a point in my life where I wouldn't. But when you start to see parabolic straight lines up like it is now, and numbers that you'd have been happy a year or two from now are happening a week or two from now, you just have to look for the exits. It's just, if nothing else, if it keeps going without you, you've made enough money that you can play other things. And that's why, like I said, is I would like a nice, slow, but steady rise in gold. If the good Lord allows us, you and I, to speak a year from now, and it's only 2,100, still I can feel pretty confident the things I've invested in that arena have all as a group done very, very well.
Yeah. And you've posted a really interesting chart about that parabolic rise of Bitcoin on your website recently. And it really dramatically shows how, like you said, the straight line shot up that it's really taken. Peter, why don't you tell us a bit more about your thoughts on the potential upside for silver right now? Are you only invested in gold?
Well, I actually became more favorable to it recently simply because the chart screamed that you had to. Pure silver bullion people hate it when I said this. They used to hate me at conferences, even though I was bullish, you know. But it is many times takes us a back seat to gold. And there are at times when it gets to step forward and lead, but it's always, at least from institutional interests, always is spoken second when you talk about precious metals. But there's no doubt about it that in this consolidation from the highs of this year, silver has held up much better. The fundamental arguments are just as good as gold, in my view. And the charts are suggesting that it can lead here. And I think it's demonstrating that. So I would not be, you know, averse of being split among them. And I think either pony will run a good race. And it'll be a photo finish to see who wins it after a certain time. So I think, you know, it's worthy. But at the same time, retail people, and they do this with general equities too, Tom. They like quantity versus quality. In other words, a person would rather buy 10,000 shares out of a dollar stock than 1,000 shares of $10 stock, because theoretically, you can't tell them that the dollar stock can go to 10. And now why I got 10,000 shares of that? And it's the same thing when people compare gold to silver. They may have the same amount of money, but they just feel better with more quantity. But that doesn't always necessarily mean it's going to work. So I just think that it'll perform, especially here in the near term. It would not surprise me that it can outperform gold for at least several weeks to come.
Interesting. That's a great point about how many shares you actually own. And again, buying silver and how the retail public is going to see buying silver versus buying gold. So, Peter, do you think about buying gold as really a hedge for inflation? And maybe give us some of your thoughts about the real causal points of inflation. Is it the money printing, or is it basically the loss in confidence in the dollar that's really going to spur that higher?
So, Tom, when I spoke at gold conferences around, or precious metal conferences, or any type of conferences where metals had an interest by the audience, the hardcore attendees hate it when I said this, and they never liked it. And I used to tell them that I never bought bullion because I needed to make sure I could get a loaf of bread or survive in an underground tunnel or any of the other hardcore fears that they had. Now, of course, those hardcore fears were really just theories, which this past year showed for some reason those people that, you know, stated those things had some validity because of what's happened on the social, political, and economic front. But even with that, I wouldn't own bullion here because I hope to survive an Armageddon or anything of that nature. Because I used to tell people you can never own enough, because if you're able to get that loaf of bread or something, and those who see that you're able to get that, they'll come and take it from you. You couldn't build a big enough army no matter how much gold you had. But I do think you're on to the proper reason to own it, and that's inflation. And what's really, really amazing is that trillions of dollars, and it's in the trillions, and it's very hard for me still, going into my 37th year, to think that we're not only talking about tens of trillions in debt, but we talk now about trillion-dollar plus budget deficits. I mean, it's unheard of. When I started in the business, the United States was the largest creditor nation. And now, you know, if we're not the largest debtor nation, we're certainly close to it. And people don't think there's any price to pay for all this money that's being printed. And you're right. The whiff of inflation is out there. And what's really interesting is because we've been so low for so long, and the government manipulates it. I mean, the percentage that they come up with and say it is, and then we all look and see what we paid last year for something and look now, we know is way off. But nevertheless, the fact that the Federal Reserve and other central banks, but led by the Federal Reserve, has destroyed the fixed income market, they brought interest rates down to levels that realistically won't take much to increase to make people actually have principal losses in bonds. That's the most amazing thing for someone from my advisory days, because we went to the bond market to preserve people's principal. And now people who are buying 10-year paper, you know, at less than 1% and don't even understand that right now, we all know inflation is more than 1%. So that bond purchase is actually a losing investment. And one of the reasons why people are taking more risk in other areas of the stock market, because they're trying to make up for that. But the inflation thing doesn't have to come back really hard. And I've never been an economist, but I've been around the business to understand some of the general principles. You cannot create money, not only here, but abroad as we had, and not expect it to be at least monetized. And when it's monetized, we'll have inflation again. And it won't take much inflation. And people forget how good of a protector gold is during inflation. And so that is a likely sale point for when gold does get into the 2000s and something, and now we're into 2021 in a big way, and people starting to look out to 2022. And now the talk will be, oh, this inflation is coming back. How do we protect ourselves? Well, people used to say, well, real estate's good. Well, real estate has a problem now because of the demographics and also how people are changing their lives. Not everybody's buying office buildings anymore or going to use office buildings because of what's transpired and how people realize that they can work at home and so forth and so on. So some of the things that might have been used as an inflation hedge, which real estate was one, may not be as advantageous, but there is something that's been around a couple of thousand years that's been proven to be a phenomenal inflation protector, because whatever you needed 100 years ago, and if you had an ounce of gold, still buys that today in today's market. And that's why I think you're on to something that's probably still several months away before we'll hear the general public talking about it. But if we're correct that there'll be an increase in inflation and it won't take much, one of the things that's going to be suggested or should be suggested at that point is ownership of bullion.
Interesting, Peter. Yeah, that's a perfect answer to my question there. So are you really looking at a general commodity bull market, or like, are we at the start of a general commodity bull market? I know, as you were saying, your thoughts on being very bullish on uranium as part of your outlook at this time. So why don't you tell us a bit more about how you're thinking about this transition out of equities into commodities might take place?
Well, the commodity market has come to a point now where relative to financial assets may be at one of its most undervalued levels, even though some of the commodities have done extremely well. I mean, look at copper. It's hard to imagine if someone told me at the beginning of the year when copper was, you know, $2 and change, and we would have a pandemic and there'd be just dramatic drops and declines, I would have predicted at best copper held its own, and yet it's done tremendously. Part of that reason, and others, nickel and iron ore, is that there's been very little new money flowing into looking for these commodities over the last several years. And even though we've gone through a horrendous pandemic and dramatic economic slowdowns, there's still a lot more people than there were 10 or 20 years ago. And those people still need all the things that people desire. So I think the commodity market is going to get more attention, especially if we just lift the pressure off that the pandemic put across the world in 2021. Now, I'm not convinced yet that that's as easy as I said it is going to occur. But if it does, then the commodity market could do even much better than it's already done. I don't follow it enough, Tom, anymore to want to get specific into whether nickel or this or that is a better play. I stay focused, you know, on gold and silver. And of course, I also, you know, became a big player in uranium. But I do think if you said to me, if you took the most two precious things in my life, my wife and my daughter, and said, Peter, does the commodity index go higher or the bond market or the stock, general stock market, and you get them back by picking the right one, I would pick the commodity market over the next 12 to 24 months than, you know, the general equities or the bond market.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell us more about the supply-demand characteristics right now that are shaping up in the uranium market and why you've become so bullish on uranium?
Sure. So never in the history of my career, both as a money manager, then as a consultant in the metals market, and then as just a private investor, did I have any ever real exposure to the uranium market. It's not something I followed or previously either profit from or predicted it would be. But at the beginning of this year, I read somewhere on the internet, someone put out this report. And I said, wow, I didn't even know uranium had done that bad. And I was looking at it. I'm going, but wait a minute. Everybody's talking about, you know, electric vehicles and more power and more people. And I said, where are they going to get this power from? I mean, they want to make a green world. They don't want to have coal and all this stuff. Well, I said, wait a minute, nuclear. So I start to look at it. And I was almost somewhat shocked, Tom, to how much the supply-demand scenario had changed to where, you know, I always knew of Cameco. And here, I said, my God, they're basically not producing anymore. They're just buying in the spot market. And where is all this 5 or 10 years from now? You know, all these countries are planning on, you know, I'm reading these statistics of how many more nuclear plants there's going to be and all. And I said, well, where are they getting the supply from? And then I looked even deeper and I saw that many of these long-term contracts were going to expire this year and next year. And these utilities are going to have to come into the market. And to them, whether they pay $30 or $65, it doesn't dramatically change because it's not like they're investing zillions of dollars into uranium, but the people that produce it. And then when I saw how few people were left producing it and even how many potential new uranium mines could come on in the next 3 to 5 years, it just screamed to be an investor in it. And again, because of where I was at the stage of my career and the time that I can afford it, I realized that I could not devote myself or have the time, because I was still very active in the sports world, to research and get all caught up on, you know, juniors. So I decided that for myself, I would focus on the handful of companies I could look at right away and come to conclude that, you know, if I'm going to be in this, I had to be in Cameco in a big way. And then I found a couple of ETFs that would give me more exposure to producers. And then I said to folks, listen, you know, if I'm right and, you know, we're going to go up, most of these things are going to go up no matter what even though they'll never be able to build their mine and get permitted and all that to take advantage of this cycle, but they'll all rise, you know, most of them will rise anyway. Keeping in mind that how many existed back in the last great bull market in the early 2000s, and then how many ended up actually producing a mine. So to be a holder in them, but to trade them or whatever. So sure enough, as the year developed, the supply and demand picture has gotten better and better. And then finally, in recent weeks, it finally kicked in. I think people finally started to see that, as I said earlier, that, you know, what's left out there that isn't overvalued or golf a bit undervalued. And clearly these last several weeks was the realization by institutions that uranium stocks in general were very undervalued and that there was a foot change coming in the supply and demand scenario. And I think that'll carry well into 2021 and beyond. I think these things have only gotten started. You know, if you just look at a Cameco chart, you know, for 5 years, it traded in, you know, like between 7 and 12. And so it has a tremendous base to go off of. And it's universal when you look at the handful of other producers, they all look at the same way. So I think that market is in, at best, the worst case, the top of the second inning, and may still be in the first inning of at least a 9-inning game. So I think that's one market that still, although they're up from their lows, and I don't think we're seeing those lows again in this cycle, it's still not too late to chase them. And I've used in my Twitter account, trains pulling out of a station, to get people to say, listen, if you're going to get involved, time is running out. You got to get on the train or else just pass it.
Interesting, Peter. One of the things that you've been talking a lot about recently, Peter, is the Quebec gold rush. So why are you so interested in this jurisdiction and what in particular makes it so attractive to you?
Earlier this year, one of the remaining few people that I kept in contact in the metals and mining industry brought to my attention a company he had gone to work for and he felt was very underpriced, considering the fact they already had an interest in a deposit that IAM Gold was leading the JV in, and it had 3.2 million ounces. So they had a 25% current interest in it. And when we did the math, the market cap should have been at least twice, if not three times, the current price it was. And that's what really kicked off my involvement in it. So I started to build the position. And then I would be introduced or met, or people saw that I was talking about this one company, reached out to me. And I started to see other companies in that area sitting with very attractive exploration projects, far past the Moose Pasture or what used to be passed off as potential, what was really Moose Pasture from the days of 20, 30 years ago when the junior exploration market had so many different areas of the world that seemed to have a budding gold rush in it. Then, of course, the thing that made me feel much more secure and to act in the big way that I did was years ago, Tom, when I was a money manager and managed some gold hedge funds, we would look at a map of the world and we might point to a few places and go, well, I don't know if I want to go there. There's a lot of political or environmental risk, what have you, but most other places were okay. Now the coin is flipped to where the point where it's pretty difficult to find wide areas with political risk, it's economic risk, social risk, terrorist risk. And lo and behold, Quebec, to my mind, is still one of the ultimate places. It's extremely mining friendly. It's a natural way of life for people in that area. And so I knew that I didn't have to worry about a lot of risks that, you know, I was heavily invested in a company that recently got a merger bid, but it was based in West Africa. And we started to see stories of just over the line in the other country of terrorist attacks. And this company suddenly was tripling its cost of security. And so, you know, those are the things I didn't feel I had to worry about in this area. So I began to look more aggressively. And as I looked, I came across another company that seemed to be very underpriced. The first one, I guess, if you want me to name them, was Vanstar Mining is what led me into this. And then I think at one point, if I'm not, I was the single largest shareholder other than maybe the past CEO that's no longer there. And then the second company that I became, I think, in the top 10 of shareholders was Northern Superior Resources, which recently made a major discovery. And I just think that whole area led by a company that I bought stock in, not a very large position, but it's the company I feel that if and when a takeover comes, it'll put Quebec on the map in this gold camp that I believe is developing there. And that's Amex Exploration. And the safety factor, the understanding, it's not difficult to understand the geological settings there. And again, it has, you know, Canada is still, in my mind, you know, the home or where you find most people who are still interested in the junior exploration, the junior resource end of the metals market, and home to some of the biggest players as well. So I just think the whole area is interesting. And, you know, and I think I'm at 4 or 5 holdings now up there because I guess some things go on the internet so fast. And I use, you know, Quebec now, anybody has a project in Quebec is contacting me. And I try to tell them I'm not in the money management game anymore. I'm not in the newsletter business anymore. Anything I do is strictly as a private investor. But I do think that we're going to hear more and more about it. And there's a lot of opportunity now still. They haven't been run up. People aren't buying up anything that sits next to something and getting a tripling in price because they did. And those are the type of things that I expect to eventually happen. And that's when you have to become a seller, not a buyer. But I really think it's going to be something we're going to hear more about as we get into 2021.
Excellent. Peter, do you have any thoughts towards the risk that maybe, because most of our listeners know that Canada itself has no actual physical gold left. So do you put any thought towards the risk of nationalization of any of Canada's gold mines?
You can never say never on that. You know, that's like saying theoretically a penny stock can't get to 100. The odds on that is astronomical. I would say it's astronomical that Canada would nationalize. I don't know what reason that would be for, but you know, after 2020, how do you say anything about can't possibly happen? Mm-hmm. But I would say, Tom, I wouldn't lose really a wink of sleep at this point worrying about nationalization of Canadian gold mines.
Interesting. Peter, how do you look at the Georgia Senate runoff that's coming up? And what effects could this have, you know, economically and politically going into the new year here?
Well, it's impacted me. I since the days of writing the Greenwich newsletter, one thing people knew that come January 1st, they would hear a year-end commentary and an outlook for that year. And I've actually held up noting to those that still follow me for my individual thoughts that I need to await to see the Georgia Senate race results because the implications they can have socially, politically, and economically are enormous. And so it is a very, very important factor. I mean, if the Democrats win and basically control the House, the left turn or the hard left turn that some in the United States seem to believe is underfoot will gain a lot more momentum than if the Republicans hold on and are able to control at least the Senate with the congressional elections then less than 2 years away. So I think there's an important, real importance factor on that. There's also, you know, there's going to be an underlining feeling that the election, there'll be a certain, at least a third of the United States citizens will have a feeling that the last election was not legit. And so if there's even any more of that in the Georgia runoff, it'll just make the political tensions in the U.S. even that much worse. And you know, one of the things that was lost in this year, because it was already occurring a few years before that, we have not had really any good fiscal management out of Washington from both the sides of the aisle. And realistically, the Fed, self-appointed or not, became both the fiscal and monetary arm of the United States by influencing and, you know, in a sense, creating money out of thin air in order to sustain the United States, even before the pandemic. And then, of course, you know, they literally destroyed the fixed income market. And let me just say that is, so when people say, what did he mean by that is, you know, there's a segment in the United States and it's grown larger, and I'm going to assume it's all around the world this way, but the demographics have changed to older citizens who tend to be more conservative and become more dependent on income producing investments in order to sustain what's left of their life. Well, that's impossible to do now in the fixed income market, at least in the U.S. I mean, how do you buy a 30-year bond under 2%? How do you, you know, tax freeze at 1%? I mean, we all know that inflation is higher than that. And so that was one of the things that helped the general stock market because people chase dividend paying stocks. But I've had seniors tell me, hey, I don't care if my general equity goes down 50%, let them just keep paying that dividend so I can keep living. And so all these things can be dramatically impacted even more depending on what is the political picture in the United States come January 6th or whenever they get the final results of that. One thing is clear, and I don't think Americans understand this, and for if you're not an American, it won't impact you much, but you need to understand here. One of the thoughts that Biden has pushed is the most petrifying to me in the business that I maintain myself still in, and that's we're very involved in estate business and retirement planning. And Biden has spoken, and the group that supports Biden or props him up or keeps him awake past 4 o'clock in the afternoon, is the fact that he has talked about doing away with what we call here in the United States, the elimination of the stepped up in basis of assets upon death. So when we all know we're going to die, so when mom and dad dies and they pass on the house or stocks, your inheritance is based on the stepped up price. So even if mom paid a dollar for that stock and it now sells for 10, your cost of that stock is 10. Well, he wants to do away with that, which becomes a nightmare in itself, because how do you deal with assets that might have been passed for three or four generations? And how do you find the original even cost and so forth? But things like that and the lowering of exemption from currently here in the U.S. from 11.5 to 2 million, he's talking. States like New Jersey, where I'm in, who under the previous governor got rid of the inheritance tax, it's coming back. They have to. They've spent so much money that they don't have. They're going to have to cut services, and we're not going to be alone in that. So there are a lot of things, and those things are going to be easier to do in a Democratic, left-leaning, controlled Congress and Senate than it would be at least still with a Republican group still the slight majority in the Senate. So that vote is very, very important and critical. And I don't see how we could go and start talking about the next year or two until we know what the results of that election is.
Excellent, Peter. Do you have any concluding thoughts that you'd like to share with our audience here as we wrap up?
Well, Tom, I just think there is an air of hopefully this was a one-off and people are going to enter 2021 just naturally more optimistic. And it's understandable. We always do that at the turn of a year. You know, we make our resolutions. We're going to lose weight. We're going to eat better. And some of us actually last for a few days or a few weeks doing that. But I would say that if we don't see that, we could find ourselves again as the first quarter draws to a close facing a downdraft in the markets if they haven't downdrafted already. And so my attitude is that as much as the professional investment community now, which two-thirds have only been in the business since the new millennium, and well over a third and close to a half only since the last financial crisis, we have a lot of people giving advice out that have never really driven on a two-way street. They might have hit a bad storm that lasted for a short period of time, but they never had to deal with two-way traffic. So as much as people will be optimistic, I think the attitude for 2021, certainly for conservative people like myself, is it's better to be a live chicken versus a dead duck and concentrate on the areas that we talked about that still relatively compared to, you know, insanely overvaluations still look attractive. Things like we spoke of gold mining stocks, uranium, and things of that nature.
All right, Peter, thanks very much for your time today. And I look forward to doing it again.
All right, God bless. Take care.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.